Steelers and Raiders, my game. I was out in Vegas for this. The Steelers got their running game going really for the first time all year. And the question is, and it will remain, does that keep Justin Fields in at quarterback? I don't expect everyone watching or listening to this to have watched this 405 game from Vegas today that ended up in a 19-point Steelers win. It's a very deceptive 19-point win. Turnovers by Fields, bad plays got taken off the board because of questionable Raiders penalties. Aiden O'Connell started an outside of the first drive, was pretty bad the entire game. The Raiders, defensively, other than Max Crosby, were not very good. So, you know, the Steelers, to their credit, they've lost games like this, gimme games, took advantage of all that. Najee Harris had his best game in a Steelers uniform. He looked like Alabama Najee Harris. He averaged over 7 yards a carry and had a long touchdown run, which he never does, by the way. And Justin Fields honestly was better with his legs than his arm. But I thought a lot of the Chicago Bears version of Justin Fields cropped up today. Inaccurate, badly missing guys, not really reading the defense, going through his reads, thinking, sensing that pressure was coming sometimes when it wasn't, escaping pockets prematurely, all that stuff. But you cannot bench a quarterback who just won a game by almost 20 points. I'm sorry. When you're 4-2 and the younger quarterback just won you a game without technically having any turnovers, you can't take him out. And it was funny because Russell Wilson was like stalking Mike Tomlin on the sidelines. You would see a shot after there was a Najee. It might have been his touchdown run, but Wilson is like almost glued next to Tomlin with his helmet on the entire time. It would have to be unbelievably awkward to have the guy that wants to be the starter and believes he should be the starter right next to the coach the entire time. But I don't think that Fields played a good game by any means, but how do you convince the rest of your roster, hey, we're winning with this guy? He does bring an added dimension with his running skill set. We're going to bench him for someone that's had a calf injury for months, who's in his mid-30s, who got benched last year because winning a game 32-13 is not good enough. The optics of that would be ridiculous, and that's why I think Fields is going to remain the starter for next week's game against the Jets. Cardinals and Packers. Green Bay spanked Arizona after the Cardinals beat San Francisco on the road last week. So that makes this an even more impressive win, even though Arizona did not have a winning record coming into this game. Do the Packers have the best offense in the NFC North? Because Spence has the stats on this. The point differentials here in this division are nuts. Minnesota's plus 61, which is the best in the NFL. The Lions are plus 60. The Bears are plus 47, and the Packers have outscored their opponents by 41 points, and yet they are last here. So I remember back in my early days of watching the NFL when there were three NFC divisions and not four, and you had the old NFC Central, with the Vikings and the Packers and the Lions and the Bears, and you had Tampa Bay that was in the division with them. And there would be some years where in a 16 playoff, four teams would get in from the NFC Central. That actually happened one year: Minnesota, Green Bay, Chicago, and Detroit. And I wish all four of these teams could get into the playoffs because they're all fantastic. I'm buying myself time because this is a very difficult question. And the irony of it is that I made the question for myself and I'm still prattling on here, trying to think about the best way and the most eloquent way to answer it. Instead, I am getting off on side tangents. The best offense in the NFC North belongs to Detroit right now. The second best offense in the NFC North is Green Bay. The third is Minnesota. The fourth is Chicago. The reason why it took me so much time to answer that question is because in the case of Minnesota and Chicago, there is potential for them to get even better, because think about Minnesota. TJ Hockenson hasn't even played a game yet. He's on reserve, but he's coming back. He's going to play. So you're going to drop a top, as long as he's somewhat healthy, you're going to drop like a top five tight end into that offense that already has Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson, solid offensive line, excellent play caller. Minnesota, the reason why I don't put them ahead of the other two teams is because Aaron Jones is banged up now. And for as much as I liked Sam Darnold, I'm not going to go overboard here and say I'm going to put him ahead of Jared Goff or Jordan Love. And then with Chicago, you just have the unpredictability of having a rookie quarterback. But this division is insanely good. And I thought, you know, I was living, inhabiting a world where the AFC North was the cat's ass, where every team in the division last year had a winning record. And I think that this NFC North has a chance to blow everybody out of the water. I said before the season on this podcast that Minnesota was not going to finish in last place. And they've had the best season to date, where they've trailed, I think, combined in their five games for less than 5 minutes. It might even be 2 or 3 minutes. And they're undefeated. And yet I'm still nervous that that prediction is not going to be right, because any of the three teams behind them could pass them between now and the end of the year. Texans and Patriots. What did we think of the Drake May debut? Because Houston went in there and took care of business. That's what good teams do on the road against a young quarterback, neophyte quarterback. Will Anderson had 3 sacks. CJ Stroud did his thing even without Nico Collins. So job well done by Houston. That's how you go from good team to great team, when you win on the road by 20 points, even against dregs of the NFL franchise like New England. But I thought May was fantastic. I'm going to give Drake May a B-plus in this game, because he didn't have Ramondre Stevenson. So he's going into this without his most effective offensive player, a guy that can make his life easier, can catch the ball out of the backfield too. The offensive line, we know, is in tatters, and that's the whole reason why I think Jacoby Brissett began the season, because they didn't want Drake May getting shell-shocked and getting abused behind this offensive line. The wide receivers, unless you are in very deep dynasty fantasy leagues, or you bet, or you live in New England or root for the Patriots, you've got zero clue who these guys are. And the kid went out there and I think accounted for 3 touchdowns. He also led the team in rushing. He had 243 yards, and he did it against a head coach who's a defensive coach with big time defensive personnel, Stingley, Anderson, Hunter. So that's a heck of a first game. And if I were on the radio at one of our stations, one of our Odyssey stations, WEEI, longtime heritage sports talker in Boston, I'd say, I don't give a rat's ass that we lost this game. This is one of the best Mondays we've had since Tom Brady retired, because Drake May looked like an NFL quarterback today. So shout out to him. I told you I liked him more than any other quarterback in this draft. Maybe I'll end up being right, although Jaden Daniels is playing like an all-pro right now, and Caleb Williams is no slouch. Browns, Eagles. Philly wins, but we have an incident at the end of the game. And I cannot wait to find out what WIP in Philly and what these lunatic hosts and moronic fans make of this situation. So if you missed it, Philly wins an ugly game. Philly has to hang on for dear life. Philly got a big boost with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith coming back off the bye, and both of them caught touchdown passes in this game. Jalen Hurts still does not look like the guy who took the Eagles to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. And because of that, Nick Sirianni is persona non grata in Philly. And so with, I think, either just a couple minutes left or seconds left when the game was practically over. Sirianni is going back and forth with fans, Eagles fans, not Browns fans who are heckling him, Eagles fans on the sideline. And it just speaks to the adversarial relationship and hate-hate relationship now that is developed there with him. Spencer's right. I saw the video, but I didn't hear the audio. Sirianni had his kids at the post-game press conference with him, which is a stroke of brilliance on his part, but I think it's BS, because how do you get into a real spirited back and forth at a press conference when little kids are up there? I actually think that that's inappropriate, because it makes it hard for the people in that room to ask critical questions and for everybody to do their job. So I'm actually not a fan of that. I think it's a cop-out move by Sirianni, but that's probably the way he wanted it after the game. He's not a popular guy there. And I don't think beating Cleveland by 4 points really does much for him. The question that we have is, did today help or hurt his cause, as thinking of his employment and long-term chances of succeeding in Philadelphia? And my answer is no. I think at best he got a stay of execution. I don't know how close he actually is to getting fired. I haven't talked to anybody in Philadelphia in a few weeks, but I said this about Nick Sirianni on this podcast, and they brought me on in Philadelphia to talk about this. This is such a front-running coach, and he's so emotional. You could see it when they were winning and having a great season. He loved to be demonstrative on the sidelines. He'd give crap to opposing sidelines. He'd make faces to the camera. He'd preen and do all this stuff. Well, when that's your personality, you better friggin' win. It reminds me a little bit of Rex Ryan. When Rex Ryan was winning the last time the Jets were any good, and he had this bravado and larger-than-life personality, great, it fit New York. But the second it started to go the other way, people got sick of that act, because these Philadelphia and New York are ultimate talk-to-talk, you got to walk-the-walk towns. I actually love that about both places. And so I don't think Nick Sirianni is – I don't think Monday is going to be an easy day for him on sports talk radio airwaves, because you should have beaten Philadelphia by a lot more points today. And I don't blame the fans for giving you a hard time on the sideline. You got to handle it better than giving it right back to them, though, buddy.